Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Samadhi mago asamadhi kumago ti. And just one of my favorite sayings, which just came up just a moment ago, which many of you probably know, that stillness is the way. No stillness is the wrong way. It doesn't lead you anywhere. Which is a saying about the importance of the still mind. And as many of you know, that the last year or two, maybe longer, I can't remember these things called time, that I've been translating or rendering samadhi as stillness. Because that stillness of the mind is not only a accurate description for samadhi, but it's also an evocative description. Evocative means that you get an emotional feeling for what this meditation is leading you to. And also it gives you the indication of what is not samadhi. You know, when the mind is restless, thinking, fantasizing, dreaming, planning. And that type of mind is in the opposite direction. It's kumago, which means like the wrong path. And it also means a restless mind, the thinking mind, the planning mind. You understand that that's called agitation. That's not stillness. And it also means it's very clear what causes that agitation. It's you doing things. You making things happen. Now you sort of planning and controlling your world. And it's not just seeing this in meditation. You know, you do experience, you know, times in the meditation where, you know, you do have some insight, the penny drops, and you actually manage to press the right button. Some sort of call that pressing the insight button to create samadhi, but it's not really pressing any buttons, it's getting your hands off those buttons. And putting them away from the levers. And not sort of being this control freak which agitates the mind. Obviously you need to have enough awareness and mindfulness that when we say this non-doing or this letting go, this not pushing the buttons or pressing the levers, you're actually doing that. Unfortunately what most people do is that when they think they're not doing anything, they're just automatically pressing the old buttons, pulling the old levers, they're just following old habits, bad habits. And because actually they are doing something, it's just, you know, it's old habits, so it doesn't appear that you're doing things. You're not going against the current, so you don't feel the flow of the doing. And because of that, sometimes people mistake what, you know, I teach would be a non-doing, a resting, a stillness of the mind. So the only way you can really know that you are not pressing those buttons or pulling the levers is by the effect. The mind is not agitated anymore. And that experience of the still mind, you know, it's not an intellectual thing. Be careful of the intellect, because what the intellect does, it assesses the meditation throughout with thoughts, with names, with labels. Because that's what intellect does. It's been trained to give a label to every experience, and thinking, or rather assuming, that once you have a label, you've captured that, you know what it is. Unfortunately, that's a very, very bad habit, especially of, you know, Westerners, always wanting to assess what's happening. And this is so important to understand that during the meditation, you should put aside that assessing faculty of the mind. You feel your way into meditation, you don't think your way in. You don't assess everything. You just get this intuition, if you like, this feeling that it's getting more and more peaceful, more and more still. Even not even naming it as stillness. And that is actually the way you learn how to meditate. It's a natural, what you call like a feedback mechanism. You know, when the mind acts or it doesn't act, you get a response almost straight away. The mind slows down, it becomes calm, it becomes still. You're going in the right direction. If the mind becomes more agitated, more tense, more unpleasant, you're going in the wrong direction. It's as simple as that. And then that mindfulness just is tuned in to that effect of, you know, what you're up to. You can actually feel your way into the deeper meditations. A lot of times, I feel my way into samadhi. You know, it feels good. Yeah, this is in the right direction. A lot of times you feel there's something up here. You know, you're thinking or you're naming. And you feel the mind being tense and having like a ball of hard energy rather than this beautiful, soft, sort of fluffy, free mind. And all of these are like evocative similes. They're not sort of intellectual naming stuff. So I often think just things like the Abhidharma, they just really missed it big time by trying to label everything. And that's why the Buddha would never have done such a thing. Again, when you feel your way into samadhi, you know, you can actually feel just this whole process of calming the body and calming the mind, relaxing it all, opening it up. So afternoon, I just was teaching some basic meditation to this group of school children from Christchurch Grammar. I just did a very simple sweeping mechanism. And that's a very simple sweeping that sometimes I'm using that for lay people because it's a nice way of just relaxing your body and getting some focus pretty quickly. But it's almost like the same thing you're doing to your mind, you're sweeping the mind. Just experiencing this moment, relaxing it, allowing it to be, soothing it, feeling the next moment, being mindful of it, experiencing it as fully as you can. Relaxing it, expanding it, softening it. Every moment you get this attitude of calming, kindness, softening, relaxing. And just when you do this to your body, you know, you find the whole muscles start to relax, open up, and the tension, the tight spots, the pain disappears. So it's almost like you're practicing on this body, not just to relax the body, but get the technique right. The meditation attitude which creates stillness. The same essential underlying attitude which calms your body down also calms your mind down. You watch, expand and let things be. So when one starts to do this, one again feels the reaction. When you do a body meditation or sweeping the body, scanning the body, whatever you want to call it, you know, you feel if you do it right, that part of the body feels good. It feels relaxed, and relaxing the body feels pleasant. And difficulties fade away. You've calmed and stilled that area of the body. When you learn how to do that with your body, apply the same thing to the mind. And that way that you are relaxing everything inside, calming things down, and you feel your way into stillness. But as you're feeling your way into stillness, you know, you notice that this path is not just for the sheer peace and pleasure of what's happening, although that really should be enough, let alone getting insight and becoming enlightened. Just the sheer pleasure of meditation should be enough, you know, to sort of keep people as monks. It's almost as if the enlightenment is a sort of like a free gift at the end. But nevertheless, you know, really that should be the real goal. I know that some people used to buy these cereal packets for the free gift inside. They weren't really interested in the cereal, they just want the free gift. It's like I remember as a kid, you know, this chewing gum. And the chewing gum had these little cards which you would collect. And I hated chewing gum, but I liked the cards. And so I'd buy the chewing gum, give the chewing gum away to my friends, and kept the cards. And that's sometimes like, you know, meditating for bliss. Instead of meditating for its real goodness, which is the enlightenment, the insights which come. And these are the fascinating things which you experience in meditation. You actually experience the Dhamma. You don't learn it from the books. You see it in practice. You see it working. And you start to see that just as you are just watching the breath or whatever, it's not really what you watch, as I keep on saying, it's how you're watching it. When you put your mindfulness there, you see all these defilements happening, all this wanting, or just not wanting, not being happy with where you are, and wanting to be better, and comparing yourself with maybe your last retreat, or comparing yourself with your last meditation. And you can see you're measuring your ego now. You're creating this sense of self that this was my meditation, now it's really good, last week it wasn't so good, or now it's in a topless, last meditation was really great. And you can see the problems you are causing there. When you actually start to see this happening, you get this amazing insight, the practical insight, seeing with your inner experience, with your own eyes, it's Pachatang Weditabo when you experience each wise person for yourself, and now you're wise because you are looking in the right place with significant mindfulness. You start to see how you react to things. When you start to see this, it is stupid to try and control all these things. It's stupid to judge yourself, to feel good about yourself because you just had a nice meditation, or to feel bad about yourself because the next meditation wasn't quite up to scratch. You are creating bad karma with your attitudes. You're creating a self with your judging. You all know what that leads to. As long as you create a self and you start judging, eventually, inexorably, you go into this negative judging. It's a strange thing about our culture, but we never really collect and remember the good experiences. We always tend to focus on the bad experiences. You know that story of the two chicken farmers? You've probably all heard me say that so many times, I'm not going to repeat it here. Why is it we always collect the shitty eggs, or the shit instead of the good eggs? It seems to be that, you know, we try and encourage ourselves to collect the good stuff, but we always tend to manage to collect all of the negative stuff. It's best not to collect anything at all. In that simile of Ajahn Chah, the best chicken farmer doesn't even go into the chicken shed. He just leaves everything alone. So we don't judge ourselves in any which way. And sometimes, though, what am I judging? Am I saying the first of the khandhas, my material form, is not as good as it was yesterday? How can you really compare material form? Are you comparing Vedana, this experience of pain or pleasure with each of the five, six senses? I experience perceptions, mental formations, consciousness. How can you judge these things? How can you compare anything? During my retreat, one of the ways of meditating I was using was just this moment. It's karmically caused. It's here. It has to be this way. Whether I'm tired, whether I'm awake, whether I'm peaceful, whether I'm restless, whatever is happening right now, it has to be this way. It couldn't be any different. So who's to blame? It's a waste of time blaming anybody. It's a waste of time praising anybody. So would I just accept this moment completely as it is? I realize that I'm not agitating the mind to be different. I'm not creating the waves of future karmic consequences. When you just let things be that way, you get this incredible sense of peace and stillness. The peace just grows, and very often it grows very quickly. You're sitting there and you don't react. And the mind slows down and stops so fast. The reason it does that is because you're getting at the cause of agitation. You're seeing the reason why there is restlessness, why there's agitation. And this is one of the most important things to do. Instead of trying to control agitation, or getting upset about it, or feeling bad about yourself, saying, I can't meditate, this is hopeless. How many rains retreats I've been meditating here, and I still can't get into jhana, I'm hopeless. Actually, if you think like that, you are pretty hopeless. But it's not you that's hopeless, it's just the way you look at yourself. Instead, you just stop. Accept, be content, embrace, open the door of your heart to this moment, make peace with this moment. That attitude change is all that's necessary. You're equanimous, allowing this moment to be still. When you just change that attitude and you watch, you're not making it any calmer. You justify this by your understanding of Dharma, by your reason. And then you allow it to be. And it gets very still. You can't do this very often at first. simply because it goes completely against the grain. You do it once or twice, and then you ask, why can't I do this all the time? That's a great question. This is where you get your insights. The reason is because it's something even more primal than this will to control. Where is that will coming from? Where is that desire to get enlightened or to get jhanas or to be somebody? Where is that cause by which you struggle with your mind, with your body, with the monastery, with other people, with life? You can see that's coming from this self, this ego, this idea of me, just born of delusion, just as your body is fed, you know, with rice or potatoes or noodles. So this sense of self is just fed and nurtured by stupidity. You come to a monastery such as this, and that ego, that sense of self, that starts to suffer. It's being starved. In this monastery, you become nobodies. Just another monk standing in line. Just another Anagarika who wears the same type of clothes, the same hairstyle as anybody else. You just don't stand out. I made that point to the students today. Young men, year 11s, what's that? That's 16, 17 maybe, 16 maybe. And they all had the distinctive hairstyles, you know, just being fashionable, always wanting to stand out. And why do you want to stand out for? Just because there's something inside of us just wants to be me. When you start meditating, you don't stand out, you start to fade out. Fade away. And that's the other thing you start to notice when stillness happens. After stillness, you start to see that things disappear. And that's one of the nicest things in the meditation. Because you're not active, things start to fade and vanish. Already mentioned in that fire sermon we just chanted a few moments ago. Now these five senses, the six senses, are on fire. They burn. And when actually you calm those external five senses, not just the sense bases, but the objects of those senses. No, you don't just calm seeing, you calm the objects of seeing. You calm the whole consciousness of seeing. You calm all the stuff to do with seeing. In other words, it's not just the sense organ, but the objects, the whole consciousness, the whole process calms down. The reason why the Buddha called these things on fire, because when it calms down, you become cool. You can see this fire is always moving and burning, like the flames licking backwards and forwards. And it harms people who touch it. When it cools down, everything becomes soft and peaceful and safe. That's why we have words like cool being a very positive word in our language. Hot-headed, hot-tempered, sort of being more negative connotations. So you find the mind actually feels cool when you start to meditate. You find the energies, even in the body. When you're very restless, sometimes you can feel your body heat up. When you're meditating, I'm sure even the temperature of the body goes down. You're not using your brain. Everything becomes very, very still. And of course that was very helpful. For those of you who don't like mosquitoes and flies, which are going to come out soon. Because the more hot you are, the more those animals find you. The same with other diseases, like even hay fever. You know, I notice that when I really calm down, then hay fever just can't come up. It's almost as if, just when the metabolism really goes down, even the physical irritations disappear. And certainly I noticed that with the pain and aches in the body. Even though I've been meditating for many years now, 33 years as a monk, quite a few years before I became a monk was meditating. So my body is pretty used to sitting in a cross-legged position. So I can sit for many hours. But I'm getting old now, so aches and pains are beginning to come. But I always notice that when you get into samadhi, there's no aches and pains at all. Just the body again is cool and calm and still. And how do you get into that samadhi with the body? You can't control the body. You can't force it to sit still. You know, sit it down, give it comfort, and then completely disengage from it. The same way you disengage from the mind. Sit it down, calm it down, let it become cool. Fire needs fuel. They say the senses are on fire. What is the fuel? And the fuel is your engagement with them. Getting involved in them. When we talk about the hindrance of karma chanda, as many of you know that I've encouraged the investigation of the Pali language, understanding it, because understanding gives you a feel for these words. Like chanda, this Pali word, is the same word you use when you don't want to come to a meeting. You give your consent, your approval of whatever is decided at the meeting. As, you know, Venerable Kemavara, because he's on a long retreat after the Patimokkha, when we had a discussion afterwards about monastery affairs, he left and he told me, I'll give you my chanda, my consent, just to do what you want. I'm very happy whatever you decide. Now you can understand that karma chanda is you're actually engaging, you're approving of the five sense process. You're saying, I approve, I agree with this. When you do that, you get involved. You get caught up. You get engaged. When you get engaged in things, you get enmeshed in them. And the problem starts. You can never find stillness. When you disengage, you cut off the fuel. You let go. You find these things settle down, just like the body settles down. And very often in meditation, after a while, the body disappears. One of those wonderful states of meditation where you're sitting there, you can't feel the hands, you can't feel the feet, the legs, the butt, can't feel the body, can't feel the head. Just the whole thing has disappeared. You can't feel any aches and pains whatsoever because you can't feel any pleasure with the body either. It's just vanished. This is what happens when you disengage. Not only does it cool down and become calm, but it disappears. Of course, this is frightening for people who define the ego by their bodies. If you think that, you know, you are strong, healthy, fit, beautiful, whatever body. And it's amazing just how many people keep holding on to their bodies. Even when they're old and ugly and sick, you still can't let it go. You think just when you've got arthritis, you've got back pain, gee, why can't I let this thing go? It hurts. The reason is because you've built up that attachment when your body was fit and healthy and beautiful. And now when you really want to let it go, you can't. It's your old, stupid karma. And now you're stuck with this old, painful body, which is hurting. You haven't got the means to let it go and allow it to disappear. So it's great when you're a young person, you learn how to meditate, when you haven't got really much pain. When you are still young, fit, healthy, beautiful, you can let it go then. Wow. Then it becomes very easy when you're old. Pains and aches, difficulties in the body, sicknesses, you just drop them straight away and get into some samadhi. Into some stillness of the body where you notice it disappear. This is actually when you see that you are not the body and also that you have seen that you're not the body, so you can let it go. If you can't drop the body, ask yourself why. Get some insight into this. Why is it that you're sitting there and you have to scratch? You have to move? It's because you're still involved with this stupid old body. Why is it when there's a sound outside, whether it's the crows, or whether it's the wind howling or the rain beating down on your roof? Why does that disturb you? And your Ajahn Chah says, not the sound disturbs you, you disturb the sound. You get involved in it, instead of just leaving it alone. Same with the pains and aches in the body, you get involved in it. Same with the thoughts in the mind, you get involved with them. It's not the thoughts disturb you, you disturb the thoughts. You react to them. And when you react to them, they keep on going. Because the reaction is the agitation which creates more thinking in the future. The engagement stirs up the mind. Disengagement, standing back, leaving it alone. This is old karma, had to happen. It's all cause and effect. No need to blame it, to judge it, to measure it. No, leave it alone. Do things like that, things settle down. The body settles down, and the thinking settles down. And the senses disappear. This is where you understand what the Buddha was talking about. Not only do you understand non-self, because you're seeing it happening. If I take myself to be this suffering, if I just drop all of this, this peace and this freedom, this liberation, you feel this. And the liberation in meditation experience is so wonderful. Highest pleasure you could possibly have. And you feel that little by little. But remember that the pleasure of meditation is sometimes not of the same quality as the pleasures of normal life. It's a different flavor. Different types of ice cream or different types of food. But the point is that the meditation pleasures are more subtle, more deep, far more enjoyable. So whenever you are meditating and even a tiny bit of pleasure comes up, or you're just satisfied, or you're content, that shows there is some piti-sukha there. There is some pleasure. Notice that. Look for it. Because one of the problems when people meditate is they just don't recognize the piti-sukha. They just haven't got used to noticing it. They're looking for something else, for something which is closer to their worldly experience of pleasure. Now, the worldly experience of pleasure, you know what the Buddha called it, like the taste which a dog gets when it gets a bone smeared with blood. It tastes like meat, but it's only the taste. It hasn't got the nutritious, hunger-abating meat there. And that's why the pleasures of the senses are like that. They taste of something important, but they haven't got the substance. When you get into meditation, you find it's got the substance. That's the difference in the type of pleasure. It doesn't just taste like meat, it is meat. It is satisfying. It's not some artificial flavor, which is what the sense pleasures are. It is the real thing. The more times you get peaceful, the more times you recognize what I'm talking about. The pleasure of stillness, of an empty, free mind. That's the real thing. The more times you go to that place, this is not just brainwashing you into sort of looking at something in an inaccurate or misleading way. This is the truth. Buddha said this many times. Many other great teachers say this. When the mind starts to become still, there is a very powerful, deep, but subtle pleasure there. So your job is to go to such places and investigate, not through thinking, but investigate through just knowing. Maybe you might reflect upon it afterwards, what it felt like. But through constant, continual experience, you will start to recognize the sheer bliss of a still mind. And you've probably just, many of you have had that bliss, but not been looking in the right place to really appreciate it. Won't you get to understand what I'm talking about here? You can focus in on that bliss. Once you focus on it, in on it, you start to see it. Yeah, that's what it is. As I remember just the magic eye photos, where you had this picture and you looked at it in a certain way, crossed your eyes and you saw it in three dimensions. you know, those little photos used to come out maybe 10, 15 years ago. I remember the first time when somebody gave me the Magic Eye book, and you had this photograph in the book, and you're supposed to look at it, and it's supposed to appear in three dimensions. At first you had, what are you talking about? You couldn't see it at all. But after a while, following the instructions, I think it was like deliberately crossing your eyes and then slowly relaxing them, you saw it. And this whole picture turned into 3D. It was amazing. I remember the first time I did that was after a Friday night talk at Nolamara. And I thought I was really tired. And gee, I just want a bit of a rest. And somebody gave me this book, and I went back into my room and started looking at it. And I was maybe up 2 or 3 hours really getting off on this. It was really good fun. But the point was here that you learn how to see things in a different way. That was always there, but you just couldn't see it until you follow some instructions. It's the best simile I can get. I mean, it's not a perfect simile by any means, but when you start to get into a still mind, after a while you can start to see it. Wow, this is beautiful. You appreciate the beginning of the end of suffering. You start to see what the Buddha was saying. Four Noble Truths are beginning to manifest for you. In the calm, still mind. I'm not talking about jhanas yet. I'm talking about just before then. However much stillness you have, even the first glimpse of stillness. Why is it feel nice? That feel nice thing. Stay with it. Allow it to grow. It is nice. It is beautiful. It's also profound. Because this is the happiness born of letting go. A happiness which is not fueled by excitement, which is fueled by the subsiding of things, by things disappearing. A happiness born of the ending of all this agitation. Once you start to see this, this becomes a path of insight. Because it leads you ever deeper in meditation. You get the hang of it. You feel bliss. And you know how it happens. A little bit of stillness. Wow. Whether you like it or not, the mind starts to see in a different way. It starts to incline to more of that bliss. And when it starts to incline to more of that bliss, it makes the usual mistake of wanting it, of trying to make it happen. And this is the frustration which many people in this monastery feel. They had experiences of stillness, they recognized some bliss. I want more. It's nothing to do with you, it's just the old habits interrupting the path. But, you know, because of what you know already, and because I keep on just plugging away at the same point again and again and again, it's the wanting which stops you getting into the deeper states of meditation. You got into that peaceful state, how? Not through wanting it. So often, you get into these things almost by mistake. You don't expect it to happen. You just... Maybe it's not your bedtime yet. Well, I might as well sit for half an hour. I've got nothing better to do. And sometimes at those times when you've got nothing better to do, you say, I'm just killing time before the meal's ready. It's, you know, only half an hour, so I might as well just sit down and do nothing. Or sometimes even just before the meal. Sometimes you've been sitting in perfect situations, you know, in your hut with nothing there to bother you at all. Nice and comfortable, really quiet. You're getting nowhere, and then you come and sit in the dining hall with 50 kids coming in there, and because you think, well, it's a complete waste, I won't get anything, then you get peaceful. That happens. It used to happen to me a lot. Get meditating in the most weird occasions, most unlikely occasions, when you're not really supposed to. And after a while, you realize why. It wasn't the noise of the kids. It wasn't the discomfort of meditating, say, in a bus in Thailand. It was just that your attitude had changed. You were just there, being in the moment, not expecting anything, not trying to get in anywhere. The craving had gone. That's why you became still, and it was beautiful. Buddha always said that, you know, the craving is a cause of suffering. We know that in theory, but now we know it in practice. Not only do we know it's true, we know what the end of suffering is, but we also know, well, at least a lot of the end of suffering, and we get the indication of how to end suffering completely. We also understand this craving business. What actually is it? Not as a word, but as a movement of the mind. And you see that movement of the mind. The movement of the mind the Buddha called craving, agitation, involvement. The upadana of taking things up, getting involved, fueling the process of suffering. You see that very clearly in this meditation practice. When you see it very clearly, you can stop it. Stop craving. Stop it in its tracks. Upadana, this uptaking, upa and adana, stops. You sit there, you don't take up anything at all. You don't get involved with anything. No attachment to anything. You're not building up more self. You're not controlling. You're not taking notes. You're not assessing. How am I doing? What am I supposed to do next? It's that thing which says, how am I doing, is what you calm down. It's that thing which says, what am I supposed to do next? Where did that idea come from? That's what one calms down. One sees the source of those agitating assessments. You calm that down, and you're away. Away into the deep meditations. The more you do this, or rather the more you follow this procedure and just become still, the more bliss you experience. And it really gets into the really fun parts of monastic life. You start to taste some most delicious experiences of your life. Even one of those will stop any of you ever leaving the monastic life. To taste real powerful bliss. When you taste those powerful bliss, even not in jhanas yet, just the big limit of blisses, that's worth years and years and years of monastic life. Once you start to taste those things, it gives meaning to what you're up to. Many people always keep on complaining about what's the meaning of life. Yeah, they go out into the world, become millionaires, they get married, and fall in love, and they get kids. After a while, yeah, but so what? What's the meaning of it? It's not solid. Again, it's just a bone which is smeared with blood. It tastes like it's something important, but it never satisfies. But you get to those bliss states in meditation, they satisfy you. Sometimes even if you get into a jhana, even one jhana for your whole life, satisfies you for years. A strange thing I say that, but that makes sense to me. It's just powerful, it's deep, it's fulfilling. You've touched something amazing. And I mentioned to you before that people used to get into jhanas in a Christian tradition or a Hindu tradition. They became saints. They called it union with God because it was that huge. You know that I've kept on saying it's not union with God, it's just the mind becoming single, becoming one, blissed out, powerful, you're not there. I can understand why people say that. But that gives you a measure of its profundity and its power and its depth. All come because you haven't done anything. Completely relaxed. Opened up in the same way you opened up your body. You've opened up your mind and let things calm down and things disappear and fade away. Thoughts just can't come up. They disappeared. Remember, you don't know when the thoughts have gone. No more you know when you stop hearing. Because as soon as you say, have I stopped hearing, then you'll start hearing again. You've actually agitated the sense. Every time you make that assessment, you make that move, you've agitated things, you've stirred up. Many of you, that's, especially those who've been meditating a while, that's your problem. You're always stirring up things, agitating things, instead of leaving things alone. Patience, kanti paramang tapo titika, said the Buddha in the Avada Patimokkha, also in Dhammapada. That this endurance, this patience endurance, is the highest, it's the paramount, from paramang, the highest spiritual practice. And he did not mean like being like a Jain ascetic, you just tolerate or you endure pain, endure sort of fasting because you're really hungry because you think, well, I'm torturing myself, it must be good. Or you just sit there and just work your way through bodily pain. That's not what I think the Buddha meant by endurance. I mean, just being so patient. You just watch and don't get involved at all. And the sign of patience is that things vanish. You become still. You're not involved. You're not disturbing. You're not stirring up. When that happens, peace comes. Stillness comes from peace. When you make peace, you experience a great stillness. When stillness happens, your ego, your self, starts to fade. For you to be somebody, you have to do things. When you stop doing things, you vanish. You go. You're not defined by your past. You're not sort of imprisoned by your hopes and plans for the future. When you stay in this moment and do nothing, you're freeing, disappearing, vanishing, merging in emptiness. When you start to do this, you feel that, wow, this is profundity. The end of all things cannot be more things. The end of all things can only be nothing, an emptiness, a disappearing. Sometimes, to get into that meditation, to experience the bliss, you start to think, wow, when I'm meditating this far, my mind is empty of all my family. No concerns about my family, even if you're listening to a talk, you're really getting into it. My mind is empty of my room and washing up and kitchen duties and other stuff. Ah, what bliss. To be empty. There's once this monk was sitting under a tree. And he kept on saying, Aho Sukhang, Aho Sukhang, Aho Sukhang. When I read that story, I thought, wow, that's just really neat. I really love that. Oh, what bliss. And people thought, the monk's passing by, thought, because he was actually a former king. He's thinking of his sex life. He's fantasizing about all the women he had in his life. Oh, what bliss, oh, what bliss. I said, no, he's not thinking about that. He's thinking of just how wonderful it is not to be a king. The emptiness of all his royal duties and fears and stuff. Oh, what bliss, oh, what bliss. Ajahn Bhamali has just worked so hard for this monastery. He's now on retreat. I expect to hear these groans of joy from your heart. Oh, what bliss. Oh, what bliss. Oh, what bliss. I don't have to answer the phone. I don't have to do the accounts. I don't have to do any repairs to the water or anything else which goes wrong. Ah, oh, what bliss. And if you actually look at what's been left behind, you think, wow, I'm free now. Now, when you focus on that, you find there is a happiness there. When you start to see the happiness which is based on the fading away and disappearance of things, you notice what emptiness means. This was actually the Buddha's description of the emptiness meditation, sunyata. To notice what has gone, and notice the freedom which you feel when things have disappeared. That freedom is called a happiness. A happiness born of things not being there anymore. The same as the happiness we feel if you've been very sick. and after a while you get released from hospital, you feel better again. The times when I've been sick, I notice as soon as you get out of hospital, you feel so good. You feel better than your normal health. What actually is happening? That was really strange. I mean, when I had typhus fever, I felt miserable for about a month in hospital. And when you got released, you felt physically weak, but you felt mentally, wow, I feel so nice, at last getting out of that hospital. It was the happiness born of something disappearing. Because the suffering had gone, the suffering of a disease, it was scrub typhus. You felt you appreciated your health. You noticed that something painful had disappeared. When you're in constant good health or reasonably good health, you don't appreciate the health. And unless you can do this mindfulness reflection of noticing, wow, pain or ill health is not here right now. A ho su kang. That king could only, or that monk now, could only say that when he recollected what had disappeared. The burden of being a ruler and administrator. When you do that in meditation, you find, wow, I've just got my eyes closed, sitting in my room. A ho su kang. I don't have to worry about my family, about my food, about washing my body. All my duties are not here. Wow, I am free. This really is holiday or holy moment. Then you start to recognize that when you let go of past and future and thoughts, you're just watching the breath. When you can watch that breath, oh, ho su kang. I don't have all these other thoughts I need to worry about, or your fantasies, or your plans. When you're actually free of that type of mind, it actually feels good. Get off on that pleasure when the fantasies stop, when the thinking pauses for a while. Get off on that. Because when you get off on that, you're appreciating the pleasure when things disappear. You're understanding what we mean by the Niramisa Sukhas, the happiness which is not concerned with things, but concerned with things disappearing, with letting go. Arana Vibhanga Sutta, the Buddha said, monks, distinguish between these two types of pleasure. Know them. Get insight into them. The pleasure of getting things, involvement in things, sensory pleasures, and these other pleasures of Dhamma when things disappear. They fade away. When you focus on those pleasures and you see them there, your meditation takes off. You're not just sitting there bored, just watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out. How long do I have to do this? Where breath go in and breath go out? I don't know what your bedtime is. Is it 10 o'clock yet? Oh, another half an hour. What's the breath go in? What's the breath go out? Or think some sort of fantasy, or just go and plan your next trip somewhere. Instead of doing that, you're watching the breath. Appreciate it. What a wonderful thing this is. I don't have to do anything else in the whole world. The only thing else, only thing I have to do, is just watch one breath. All my work has been done. All my jobs have been completed. All the striving is at an end. What I have is just one breath to do. All the letters, all the writing, all the cleaning, all the work, all the everything is gone. You've retired. You've left work. You're on the weekend. You've got nothing to do. Remember being when I was a student at school. Yeah, this school I had that used to have these half-day holidays if you've been a good boy. And if you've been bad, they used to keep you back for detention in the afternoon. But when these half-day holidays, I remember just, well, I must have been about 13. During the lunch break, I did all my homework, got it out of the way. We had this half-day off. I had nothing to do in the whole world. All my duties had been completed, only a 13-year-old boy. I remember that as one of the most memorable afternoons of my early life. Because I realized I was completely free. I could go wherever I wanted, do whatever I wanted to do. I was free of all responsibilities and duties. What I was experiencing as a 13-year-old there was the experience of the pleasure, the happiness of things disappearing. When you can get into that in your meditation, when you're just watching a prayer, there's so much stuff disappear. You're on holiday. Wow, this is so nice. And that's all you need to do. When you think of all the stuff you need to do next, and all the deeper stages of meditation you have to reach, you can't appreciate this moment. So the path to deeper states is not there for you anymore. When you think of what you need to do next, of how you can improve your meditation, you've agitated the mind again. When you just experience and are so satisfied and content with how far you've come, then piti sukha starts to arise. Ho Sukhang. I'm not enlightened yet, but I've got rid of so much. I may not be in jhana yet, but at least I'm just watching this one breath and got nothing else to do. I don't want jhanas. One breath is all I want. I'm being a person who wants for little. Just this much is enough for me. Isn't it wonderful that I've got nothing else to do, nothing to worry about. So don't put other burdens on yourself, like having to get into jhanas, or having to get enlightened in this retreat, or having to do this or do that. Especially when you're on retreat, because afterwards we always ask you, how was your retreat? So you feel really embarrassed if you don't have anything to report. You don't say it's bloody awful, worst retreat I've ever had in my whole life. You feel very embarrassed to say that. But instead of actually putting all this pressure on you, on yourself, it is... be at peace with this. Just watching one breath is all I need to do. No more goals, no more demands, nothing more to do in my whole life in this moment. Just watch one breath and appreciate it. If you can do that, you're on your way, mate. Out of samsara, you're on your way into jhanas, because you're simplifying to the max. You're wanting nothing. And then just the whole thing just expands by itself. And that's the most wonderful thing for a monk like me just to observe. You just do this. I'm not just saying this. It's not theory. Not something just read in a book and you just repeat to other people or heard from your teachers. This is what happens in your own meditation. You sit there and just, all I want is this one breath. This is enough. And you really appreciate, oh, just the joy of just wanting little. And that joy just explodes, blossoms, and sometimes you're crying with bliss. Nimittas, they just come up and they just envelop you. Everything just works. And jhanas happen. You don't make them happen. You get out of the way to allow them to happen. Appreciate the bliss of the moment. This is almost like a seed, like striking the match, and the things start to go by themselves. Getting that first bit of bliss coming up, and understanding where it comes from, but letting go and appreciation, not wanting something else, simplifying. And it gets so nice, and nicer and nicer and nicer and nicer and nicer. And this type of happiness, which at first, you know, you couldn't really see very clearly, it becomes really entrancing. It just captures the mind. And that's what it's supposed to do. It's not dangerous. Anyone who sort of feels that, well, you get attached and stuff like that, I'm not going to tell you to look at the books anymore. Feel it. It doesn't feel like it's dangerous or not. And it isn't. It's got this quality to it of liberation. It's a pure happiness. And it leads deeper and deeper into more letting go, to more detachment. It's because it's the ego, the sense of self, because can't live in such happiness. It cuts away at the sense of self, of craving, desire, and all the negative defilements. Now you know why they're called negative defilements. Why they're called akusala, unwholesome. Not because some god said this is evil and this is good. It's because it's their nature to feel pure, to lead to stillness, to incline towards freedom. As you go deeper in this path, more and more things fade away. You understand the brilliance of the Buddha's teachings. This is all about the fading away of a self, an ego, a me, a mine. Realizing these six senses are like a blaze of fire. You cool them down and calm them down till there's no fire left, no fuel left, nothing left. The more and more that things disappear, the more freedom you feel. You go through the jhanas. It just happened. More and more things vanish. Now you understand what the path is of emptiness. Nothing there. It's just so beautiful to understand that. But even more beautiful to experience that. See the fading away of all things. Sabbang nalang abhinivesanaya. There is, all things are not worth. It's all like attaching to, but that's really a rotten word. All things are not worth getting into. Like the nivesana is like a dwelling place. Abhinivesana is really like getting and making it a house for yourself, an abode where you live, where the self can exist. You see, all of these things, they just disappear. You vanish and become more and more peaceful, more and more still. I started this talk about stillness. Things get incredibly still. Sometimes you think you can't get more still than this. But it gets even more still. Less things are moving when less things are there. It becomes incredibly still. And even more incredibly still, sometimes the superlatives just can't keep up with your experiences of meditation. It gets more and more empty, more and more still, more and more blissful. You're understanding why Nibbanang Paramang Sukhang. Why Nibbana, the cessation of things, is the ultimate bliss and happiness. You're feeling this all the way. Insight, the path of insight, is a happy path. It's the happiest path you could ever possibly go on. And it gets increasingly happiness. It's a gradual path. So when you get people getting into it, when they're off, it's a snowball effect. Rolling downhill, the snowball gets bigger and faster. Just getting you started, that's the hard part. Once you're started, you appreciate the bliss. And all the Dhamma in the world is right there in your heart, in your meditation, in your experience. The whole Tipitaka just is seen evolving. As the mind just gets into the bliss states, senses disappear, khandhas are seen for what they are. All the sense bases are right there, fading away. Understand what it means now by the being on fire. Why that's suffering, and why just when you get fed up with that, nibbida, you just let it go, they fade away and disappear. From nibbida, you get viraga, the fading away. From viraga, cessation. Things go. Understanding this, you become free. This is a path, insight, bliss, meditation. It's all right there in the heart. All you need to do, follow the instructions. Sit down, shut up, watch, don't get involved, see how much you can let go, and appreciate the bliss and happiness which is right there. Those similes are given many times, like jhana is right in your mind in this moment. You have got jhanas right now. It's covered in all these cloths and boxes. You don't need to throw away this moment to experience jhana. You just need to be with it a little bit longer. Make peace with it even more. Stay here, in this moment. Don't get rid of anything. That way, the cloths wrapping the jhanas, they just unwind by themselves. They unwind, you get closer to the center. See, right in this moment, wow, there is the bliss. So when you meditate, you don't need to go anywhere. Don't need to look for jhanas. It's right here. Just go deep into this moment. Not forcibly deeper. Stay put. Be still. Appreciate the joy. And the whole thing opens up. It's the experience. You're just sitting there and it happens. You got on the plane. Don't need to rush anywhere. Sit down. It just happens. That's how it happens. That's obviously what I wish for every one of you in this monastery. To experience the bliss of a mind which disappears. That's the talk this evening.
Sūpatipanno bhagavato sa